Yes, I think we still lost some people in the strange corridors of the Portuguese parliament. I have a feeling that in 2 years' time they will find some skeletons, but let's see if they will find their way here. We have two sessions in front of us. The first session is about how institutions that are, you could say, old institutions can develop into being parliamentary TA institutions, or maybe develop out of it and in again. So it's about establishing and re-establishing links to institutions in technology assessment. And we have two presentations, two cases, you can say, that we would like to present you for and about that. One from Austria and one from Denmark, and although in the program the Danish presentation is first, I think A comes before D. So we will start with the Austrian presentation.
Thank you. Bom dia, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, after this great meal. I consider the Pachita project to be a very significant one and have found the speakers' contributions today and yesterday and the discussions quite stimulating and interesting so far. Linking scientific discussions with legislative action is a crucial issue in Austria. And I believe it is imperative to have transparent, open and broad discussions leading to better informed decisions on policy. Such a discussion is especially important if the topics involved are controversial. Most decisions will have different consequences for economy, society, and also environment. And we need an open and transparent approach to decision making, certainly also because that is the way to stimulate public debate and build general awareness of topics that are essential for our future. It is indispensable for politicians to have a solid basis for making responsible decisions and seeking and supporting sustainable solutions. Therefore, it is essential to strengthen the link between TA institutions like the ITER and the Austrian Parliament. Greater cooperation will be a major step forward in improving the quality of decisions reached. Taking all this into account, I'm especially happy about the closer ties between the ITER and the Austrian Parliament in recent years. As the chair of the Committee for Research, Innovation and Technology in the Austrian Parliament, I'm also very pleased that EPTA upgraded Austria from associate to full membership last September. I've been kept informed regularly about activities in TA by the director of Institute of Technology Assessment, Dr. Nantwi. Our Committee for Research, Innovation and Technology has discussed technology assessment and its significance for all decision makers, as well as for the Austrian Parliament at length on several occasions. ITER experts have spoken to the committee regularly, and the session a year ago marked a renewed interest in TA in the Austrian Parliament, and all parties agreed that there should be a regular exchange on this topic in Parliament. Last year, the Speaker of the Austrian National Council already sent a letter to the Speaker of the Finnish Parliament confirming our intention to intensify our parliamentary activities regarding TA, as well as our relationship with EPTA. Furthermore, all members of the Committee on Research, Innovation and Technology regularly receive the ITER dossiers published by the Institute of Technology Assessment. This series is directed at Austrian parliamentarians and their staff, as well as experts in the administration. The establishment of this regular communication channel between the Parliament and the ITER has been welcomed by the members of the committee, including those newly elected last September. The detailed discussion was suspended before the elections last September and has now recommenced. And there is good news to report. Last month, the Austrian Parliament moved to discuss further deepening of the cooperation between TA institutions like the ITER and the Austrian Parliament, and is now focusing on how to organize such cooperation. And there has been positive commitment by the highest board of the Austrian Parliament to commission the ITER and the RET, Austrian Institute of Technology, to outline ideas for further deepening of the cooperation relationship between TA institutions and the Austrian Parliament. The ITER and the RET have proposed an interactive and participatory approach. They want to investigate the needs of Austrian Parliament members interactively to achieve sustainable results. And those results should then be the basis for establishing more structured cooperation between TA institutions by meeting the specific needs of the parliamentarians. I'm now working to secure a budget for the parliamentarian committees to commission studies on a certain number of topics of interest. It would also be constructive if each party had the right to choose a topic, so that topics which are only of interest to a minority might be chosen as well. Those details are now part of negotiations within the 6 different parliamentarian groups in the Austrian Parliament. And I hope that next year I will able to inform you of further successful improvements in the cooperation between the ITER, also the RET, and the Austrian Parliament. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Rupert. And then I have it's a little interesting thing. I will give the floor to Jens Henrik, who is the parliamentarian who are just in the process of doing something about my organization. Very interesting. Interesting to hear what you will say, Jens Henrik.
I understand that you are interested, and I don't think you know exactly what I'm going to say. But I'll tell you a little story about the Danish Board of Technology. Because I was elected as a new member of the Danish Parliament just about 2.5 years ago, and a couple of months after that, we were negotiating a big research budget, and we were going to spend about 900 million Danish crowns. In this process, the ministry came with a list of things that could help us get this money. And somewhere down that list, Lars was mentioned and his 10 million. 10 million, we had to find 900. So it was such a small amount that I think we hardly noticed that it was on the list. We made an agreement to close them down, to take the 10 million. That had to be changed in the law. And the law was sent out in a hearing. And we got about 100 answers from all over the world. One said, this is a great idea, close them down. 99 said that it was a silly idea. Then I think it was a surprise to most of us as speakers that the support was so enormous, because I, as a new politician, hardly knew them, and I hadn't noticed what they've been doing, and I think a lot of my colleagues hadn't either. And I return to that because maybe that's something we can learn from this. But now we had made this decision in a consensus, and there was no way we could open this agreement. So we had to go on closing them. Then what should happen next? One idea that came up was to turn the DBT into a private, public good, not-for-profit foundation. And we had agreed on that in the political arena, and that's what happened. Then we had as a core issue how to establish a connection to the Danish parliament, because we had no money, that was for sure. Still, there was found money to ensure the losses for 2 years, 2012 to 2013. We made a communication in the Committee for Research that stated that the DBT could work for the committee if we could find the money in the parliament. There were appointed two MPs, Mr. Per Clausen and myself, from the parliament to take place in the representatives of the DBT. Now, after the 2 years, we were going to make an evaluation of this. And it turned out that there had been no use of them at all. We hadn't found any money. I think I found a little bit about drones, but that was not the committee, that was just beside, that gave them a little bit to do. But still, in this evaluation, we tried to find new models, because we could see that if we didn't do anything, then they wouldn't get any connection to the parliament, and the role that they have played in Denmark and in Europe would just disappear. We tried to make this thing work, and just a week ago, we succeeded to make an agreement. The core issue there was that still the government has no money. So we couldn't say you have money, but we made an agreement that says that they have a chance to talk to the committee, they have a chance to talk to the government, they have a chance to talk to the ministry. And then I think it's up to Lars to try to talk them into making some jobs for them. And what happens now? We have just got this communication in consensus, luckily. Next step will be that I'll take in my committee. I am sitting in the Committee for Research, Innovation and Higher Education, and we will take the initiative to take a dialogue with Lars and his people and trying to find some agreement about things that we think we have to do. And then they will have this the same way to go to the other committees, and hopefully that will lean out to some jobs, I could say. But I think I'll just return at the end here about what lessons we've learned from this. Because I think the reason why we could close them so easily was that none of us politicians actually knew what they were doing. And I think it's very, very important that you all working with this area keep the politicians informed, keep them... So I have the need to feel that I get the help to make my right decisions. And if I don't see how I can use them, then it's not important. So I think we can be optimistic, and I think we have a chance, but we have to work hard to make this happen. So a good story or a bad story? Well, it's kind of a fairy tale. Thank you.
A fairy tale, and they used to have happy endings, so we look forward to that. Are there any comments, are there any questions to the two MPs up here about the stories, the cases you've heard? Isn't
Thank you. Jens, thank you for that very interesting story. Of course, my former office was one of those 99 who wrote in strong defense. But if we'd had a French gentleman here called Michel Biro, who we know well, he would have said to Lache, how can you possibly serve the parliament when, according to the old terms of the DBT, you parliamentarians were specifically forbidden for being on your board, I think. And I've always thought that that was a bit odd myself. And maybe was that part of the reason why people like you were not so aware of the Danish board, because there weren't parliamentarian members on its governing board?
Or maybe you can answer.
No, I will not answer that, but I just want to give some background information. In Denmark, there is this, Jens Henrik knows, we often talk about the arm's length principle. And that is the reason why the Danish Board of Technology was established without parliamentarians on the board. So a board was made from outside in society, serving parliamentarians, but without parliamentarians being inside. That's the arm's length principle. And the question is, did that have a role for what happened to the Danish Board of Technology?
Okay. I think in a way, at least it's certain that the fact that we had not much knowledge of what they were actually doing had an influence. But maybe it had to do with the works they were doing, because I think they've spent very many resources out in Europe working on great projects here and there and everywhere, but maybe not so much in the Folketing in Copenhagen. And that may be why a lot of you guys think that they've done a splendid job, and we could sit in Copenhagen and think, well, what are they actually doing with our money? And I think, on the one hand, it's right to have this arm's length in the counseling of us, but on the other hand, we have to have the close connection, and we need to know what they're doing, and we need to have an impression that we can use it more than we had at that time. I'm sure that if we have heard from them more or less every day, and then we would have found it on the list and never saved those 10 millions. It was such a small amount combined to the big money, so we could easily have done so, but when we had done it, we couldn't go back on it. That was obvious.
For me, it's also an important story about Mr. Longillet yesterday told about the fragile nature of technology assessment, and that parliamentarians have to take care of it. I think there's a two-sided thing. One is that, yes, we maybe should have been more visible to the parliament. I'm not in doubt of that. But also that there needs to be a clear invitation from parliament to that, because there, as from my side of that, it's also when you are in this arm length, you have this arm length principle, then sometimes you feel that you press yourself into the room of the parliamentarians. So there has to be this mutual invitation, and that has to be going on, and maybe that's also part of the reason that it happened. So it is fragile, yes, and I think that's very, very important to think of for any TA unit in this world, that it needs to be taken care of. If there are no more comments here, then we will go to the next session. Thank you. Which is about strengthening technology assessment in Europe. I would like the panel to go up, sit up here. It's Ulla Burkhardt, then Jan Kasmierczak. Jan, I'm sorry if I pronounce your... Is that okay? Jan Kasmierczak. Rini van Est. Please, Rini. Francisco Veloso. And Michel Antoine. At this time, I will not mix up the speaker role. We will start with Ulla. Please listen to these presentations as a start of the final debate. Now we have had many cases. We have listen to things coming up, institutions being thought of to be established. We have heard about institutions being old institutions, getting links. Also heard about the OTA that was closed down and coming up again. We also heard about the DBT closed down, coming up again. And in that picture, we still have the European or maybe global dimension that we need to think of. So we do not only think of single institutions, single countries, but we also have to think of the picture, big picture. How are we going to strengthen technology assessment in Europe? And this discussion needs to be forward-looking. We can learn from the past, that's good. But what I would like you to think of when you hear the presentations is, in the discussion afterwards, which kind of innovative or boring solution, but effective solution to how we can strengthen technology in the future am I thinking of? So please think about that when you hear the presentations. And we will start with Ulla Burkhardt. The floor is yours, Ulla. Ulla is, Ulla, I'm sorry, I have to use the word. She is a darling of TA, and she is the former chairman of the research committee in the Bundestag, just stopped in the last before the last election, and is still working with TA. Ulla, the floor is yours.
Some people say I'm the bitch of TA. So I want to make 3 points on the background of really a long experience with the TA unit close to the parliament. It's not the time now to explain more of it, but I have a different opinion concerning a successful model of parliamentary TA than I heard in this afternoon. But I can offer you to give you more information about our model after this this unit. So I want to make 3 points. One, to have a look back, because I'm convinced that we only can talk about future when we know where we started. The second, give you 2 remarks on my opinion concerning the PACITA process. And third, as Lars asked me to do, to give some conclusions and wishes concerning the following process. So to the past, between last yesterday mentioned, between 2006 and 2009, MPs with TA practice met several times to share their experiences on the occasion of the annual APTA meetings and invitations, e.g. of the committees in Paris and Berlin. We invited our colleagues to share our experiences with TA. And we all were convinced of the benefits of TA, and with a view to the enlargement of the Union, the concern was to win over colleagues in another state to the concept of known independent scientific policy advice and to support them in the implementation. And a milestone was the Paris Declaration of 2008 with Mr. Barrot, who was just mentioned. And in this declaration, we, the members of parliament, we specified 5 necessities. We need, first, regular direct exchange with own agendas for the parliamentarians. Second, a platform or a coordination unit to organize this. Third, a handbook, a so-called cookbook, that provides an overview of the different institutional designs and conditions in the individual countries. Fourth, in order to move forward, additional financial and human resources are required. And fourth, in the EU Commission shall be the appropriate institution because the Commission has the means to finance such activities, as we've seen. I think one circumstance was crucial for the success of this initiative before it was the initiative for PACITA. Lars knows more, as he wrote me. The fact that there was a personal continuity because the same MPs met several times, we created a real dialogue, and I think that's really crucial for a common process. And Because it's a political truism, drivers of any kind of changes are not abstract institutions or structures, but that are always real people in politics as in everyday life. And we can learn from this from the experience of the decline of the OTA. It was mentioned, the American mother of all TA institutions. It decayed not only for having too many opponents, but also not to have enough supporters. And I think that was the experience the Danish colleagues made too. The question was, what has Pasita achieved and what would be the next step? I think until now, Pasita provides an impressive comparative and systematic overview and insight to the different national characteristics. And we have to thank you very much, all the professionals, to give us this. E.g., the role of science, political system, R&D governance, culture or public debate, and especially the TA arrangements. However, in my opinion, there is a blind spot. The working conditions of the parliaments, and in particular of the members of the parliaments, and their basic needs. Why is this key? They are the addressees and users of parliamentary TA, therefore they must not have only information, knowledge about TA, they must be convinced of the need and benefit, the advantage for themselves, for their work and for their political responsibility as elected decision makers. This requires a permanent communication strategy to make them feel concerned, feel they are being taken seriously and not overwhelmed, for example, by an agenda, by a very rigid time schedule. To develop this strategy, you need to know more about the specific working conditions. And in my experience, these are very different in the individual countries and the parliaments. Even in the parliaments with TA practice, TA is no integral part of policy making, but always an additional task for the responsible MPs without them receiving any recognition or brownie points for the next election. They are working hard, 60 hours a week without TA, and we want them to do TA additional, and we have to have an eye on this. And so, what should be the next steps of Pasita? First, I think we have to have a look back and to ask which lessons are learned. And the question is broader than Leonard Henn put it yesterday. I think we have to discuss what have the scientists learned, the TA professionals, what have the MPs learned, and who else has learned something about the process until now. The second point, enhancement and capacity building for members of parliament, which also requires a solid knowledge base. But this cannot be gained mainly from the perspective of scientists. It's a fact that there are two cultures, the scientists on one side and the politicians on the other side. They talk in different languages, they have different time scales, and so on. I think you know what I mean. And it's very important to bridge the gap between two cultures. And it's not done with one act and with one action. It must be a continuous process. It's a learning process, as we found out in Germany. And what to do further, I think, as with PTA projects, the further question and steps should be to develop together with the scientists and with the MPs to bridge the gap between the two cultures. And I think it's crucial to reach the goal of reinforcing the existing PTA models and to expand more to those countries who have not still a TA unit. And concerning the question of the network, the Portuguese colleague mentioned this morning, I think it's very necessary, and I suggest that each parliament and the parliamentarians here try to have an idea if they can invite members of other parliaments to come to their capital and to talk about the experiences. There's nothing good than you do it by yourselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Ulla, and thank you for stressing the fact that there can be blind spots among professionals about the needs of parliamentarians. Of course there can, and it's very good to put words on them then. And one of them you mentioned, there's a need for parliamentarian-to-parliamentarian meetings. There's a need for meeting in other settings than here where we have a program and formal speeches and all that. So a more personal connection between parliamentarians. Thank you very much. Jan Kaczmierczak is a member of the Council of Europe, and you just finished a report on science and ethics. And you will tell us a little about what the Council of Europe is doing with regards to TA and your own thinking about that, as I've understood. So the floor is yours, Jan.
Thank you very much. First of all, I have to confess that after being invited to take part in this panel, I have had a real problem, what to say. And in fact, this problem is not solved up to now. So forgive me if a part of my contribution will have the form of questions rather than answers. As I understand, we are talking about the future, the perspectives of strengthening technology assessment. And in this point, I am absolutely enthusiastic about the necessities of strengthening this model. But if we are talking about possibilities, well, my enthusiasm is a little bit lower. Especially because of the second part of the topic, in Europe. Before lunch, our colleague from Finland, Paula, asked a very important question concerning the meaning of this term, what it means in Europe. Does it mean in countries which are the members of EU 28, or I can ask as a member of Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, we are thinking about the whole Europe. 48 countries, including Belarus. The Belarus is not a member of the Council of Europe, but it's no doubt the part of Europe. Because if we consider this larger version, well, the new problems will appear. As I told you, I am enthusiastic about the idea, and I certainly have some experience, both with implementing this model in my country. Poland is not a pacita country at the moment, but we have done a lot of good job in preparing the infrastructure for technology assessment, I think. We created in the Polish parliament the Committee on Innovations and New Technologies. We have a quite good background of experts. Last year was established the Polish Society of Technology Assessment as a scientific society. And now we should act. The question is what to do. And in fact, I would like to base on this very popular model to formulate four questions if we try to analyze the problem. First question, what? Next question, why? Third, who? And last but not least, how to do it? Well, what? It seems to be evident. We want to strengthen a technology assessment model. Of course, it's an additional question where, but I hope you will try to answer this question. Why? I think it's a good moment to say something in this point. I'm afraid that it is possible that the problem of strengthening the technology assessment model will have something common with the model of sustainable development. It's commonly accepted, okay, it's a very good idea, but there is a lot of countries where the authorities are thinking in the following manner. Because we are not enough developed, so let's first develop, and then we'll try to think about sustainability. So the question is it possible to meet the same phenomenon in the case of technology assessment? Well, it's not time to talk about how, but let me say that to me, there is a number of key points which can be treated as a roadmap for the future, for the near future, for the larger future of strengthening the technology assessment. First, is maybe only my private opinion, is the education. The education of parliamentarians, but also the education in a much wider sense. I mean, we have in many societies, in many places, we have to change the manner of thinking about the role of technology in the social life. So it's a necessity to educate the former engineers, the new lawyers, economists, and so on, to prepare the good background for practical implementing this idea in Europe, let's say. Of course, it's the last question, why only in Europe? Because at the moment, the economy is global. And in fact, these technologies and this product, which potentially are able to have the biggest impact on the society, they have the global dimension. So this is my last question. How to limit to the Europe? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jan. I really like the idea of a roadmap towards strengthening TA in Europe. I think that's a good way of putting it. Kind of a, not a strategy, but we do that, and we do that, and then maybe we will arrive at the end where we should arrive. Very intriguing idea. The next speaker will be Rini van Est. Rini is a long-term friend and a practitioner of TA in the Radenau Institute. I think your formal title is a trench catcher, isn't it right? Yeah, I've always liked to see you like hunting butterflies or something. You're all out there hunting trends. But anyway, Rini will tell about one of the works that we did in Pasita, which was about drawing up lessons about institutionalization of TA.
Yes. Thank you, Lars. So as a trend catcher, let me start with some trends. I will give you two mega trends. First mega trend, biology is becoming technology. We're becoming increasingly able to map with all our biomedical and digital technologies, to map the human body, to map all kinds of living organisms, but we also get all kinds of technologies to intervene in these living systems. That's the first trend. Second trend, technology is becoming biology. Michel Antoine gave a perfect example because it's all about digitization. And he talked about the digitization of mobility. And actually, he clarified that the mobile industry, the car manufacturers, which have a long time tradition, maybe of more of a century in France, actually they're on a turning point because the world is changing rapidly. And they're already, I mean, he gave an example of a beautiful process in which parliamentarians actually started to realize what is happening in the world. There's big competition from China, from electric cars. There's big competition coming up from America. And I would say this is not about the future. It's actually trying to understand what is going on at the moment. So this digitization of the car, of the industry, the industrial internet, and of our own lives, actually that's what's going on. That's why the Radnau Institute introduced the term intimate technology, actually to clarify that for the last three decades we talked about ethical issues around biotechnology. But the ethical issues are springing up all kinds of way, also on information technology. Information technology, because of the digitization of life, because digitization of our body, of our behavior, of our social lives, it's a real revolution which is taking place. And if you agree with this understanding, that we're really into revolutionary times, then the question becomes, what's the democratic challenge? And I really loved the speech of René Longuet yesterday. He said, well, if there's a technological revolution going on and you believe in democracy, what's the challenge? I mean, the challenge is to inform members of parliament, because, they are the keeper of democracy, you could say. But it's not only about the parliament, it's about informing the people, because if there's not a debate about this technological revolution what's going on, what are we doing? We are having a car with no steering wheel, and we're having a car that's speeding up without brakes. So we have to address not only members of parliament, we have to talk with the people, inform the people. Even the social sciences or the TA community has to understand itself what is happening. And if we deal with, all kinds of small technologies coming up, that's not doing the job. We have to look in a trans-technological way of what is happening. So we have to inform scientists and technology makers themselves. We have to engage with policymakers. And I think if there's one thing what PESITA has learned us is that if we looked at technology assessment within APTA, actually we thought about technology assessment for the parliament. And we had three models. The first model was, okay, there's a TA institute within the parliament. And it's an emotional debate. And then you have TA nearby the parliament. And then there's a third model, and that's the independent. Yeah. But there's no institute which is independent. Within PESITA, we saw that there's a multitude of ways to think about technology. Okay, there's technology for the parliament, but we also have to include, if we want to have to address that democratic challenge, we have to address thinking about technology and its social aspect for policymakers, the government. We have to address, indeed, the public. We have to address science and technology. How do we do that? I think we have to open up. Maybe APTA has to move up, or we need to have a new network, but we have to find a way to think about, the social aspect, the social meaning of technology in a broad way, in an inclusive way. And I don't know how to do that. And we shouldn't only look at the national level, we should look at the European level, and even at the global level, because there's a lot of challenges ahead of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Rini.
That was the trend catcher. Thank you for remembering us about opening up, and really, and you don't know how to do that. I'm sure that there will come different suggestions about how we can do that later. The next speaker will be Francesco Veloso. You're professor at the Catholic Lisbon School of Business and Economics, and you're a member of the Portuguese Council for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. Look forward to hear what you have to say, Francisco.
Thank you very much. As to the challenges or the future of TA, I'm going to briefly mention a couple of thoughts. The first has to do with what I see as the big questions that deal with risk and uncertainty on technology that we are all fully aware that exist. And this is a very important dimension of what technology assessment is about. But that also provides us some guidance about what we might expect, in particular in Europe. Because, for example, I lived 15 years in the US, and 10 of them I was involved in, I was part of a department that had very high involvement in technology assessment for Congress in the US. And one important thing is that there was never in the minds of anybody in the department that there would be, you know, any kind of technology assessment for the state of Pennsylvania, where I was based at. All the technology assessment that people were heavily involved were for the federal government. And this is important because as European institutions get strengthened, there's a variety of risk factors, for example, the risks of nanotechnology in general, that are very hard for individual countries, especially for small countries like Portugal, to think that are relevant in terms of focusing their efforts on technology assessment. So what I see as we go forward is bigger questions, big questions, questions that some of them may be actually of, you know, global nature, like climate change or nanotechnology. Those are probably going to migrate towards more European-centered institutions such as STOA or others that could be created, because those questions are really not motivating enough at the local or the regional or the national level for citizens to really support it and for parliamentarians to really think that it really matters for them. That doesn't mean that technology assessment is not relevant for the countries. On the contrary, I think that if I look at Portugal, unfortunately, I see a lot of debate on Parliament that's very poorly informed by what's going on technology, and not on Parliament in general, in the political debate here in Portugal. And I think that's really something that inhibits and reduces the efficiency and the value of the political decision process. And I think that's quite important, because on the other hand, if I think about certain things that I really feel are important for Portugal, like coastal or sea spatial planning, this is something that's critical for Portugal, where Portugal could have a technology assessment unit that is at the leading edge of understanding what the general understanding of science and technology has to do for coastal and sea spatial planning. The same thing with, for example, wind power and intermittency, because, you know, this is a big issue here in Portugal. We see, even, you know, for those that are here, that are Portuguese, over the last few months there have been very vivid debates in Parliament, in the newspapers, about the role of the wind power, you know, whether or not the alternative generating power is there just to serve the wind power, or is there for an alternative reason. You know, are we paying too much in terms of the wind, the tariffs? All of this discussion could be much better informed if there was a little bit more of understanding of the technological dimensions that are associated. And like this, there could be a variety of other issues. So the way I see this is this evolution towards bigger issues, broader issues that are going to be evolving towards these European institutions, and then local but very important dimensions that are going to happening in the local technology assessment units. And I actually think that that's critical to get parliamentary support, because if you go and ask parliamentary to discuss things that they see that they don't have an influence local, because it's getting decided in Brussels, they're not going to be motivated to really support any kind of studies on that dimension. And so, in that regard, and I'm going to also bring back a comment that I did in the morning, I think for smaller countries such as Portugal, finding a reasonable balance where one has very small units based in the Parliament that are then staffed and supported by, say, the National Science Foundation of the country to support some fellowships for postdocs to come and do some of the groundwork and support this very tiny unit that exists in Parliament, maybe a way forward. And this way forward does not have to be only supported by the National Science Foundation of the country. It could be also supported by strong and important foundations in each of the countries. You know, in Portugal, again, we have, for example, the Gulbenkian Foundation, the Champalimo Foundation, or the Portuguese American Foundation, all of which could support also, you know, some people to go and support this broader effort that happens here in terms of what it could be, the development of a technology assessment unit based on the Portuguese Parliament. But again, I think that some of these ideas are not necessarily only for Portugal, that they could be of broader reach or broader interest. To finalize, let me just talk about what I think is a really major challenge, I think, for the technology assessment, for which I don't have an answer myself, but more in terms of the global debate, which has to do with, in general, the democratization of all these processes related to technology and to assessment. We have now at the tip of our fingers the ability to communicate with literally everybody in the planet that has access to an internet
that has access to an internet connection. Those are many billions of people. And this is important because we're seeing this, what we call, you know, crowdfunding, crowdsourcing, crowd, you know, participation evolving in many interesting and important dimensions. You know, this is supporting business models, both on the private side as well as on the social side. And if we do think that technology assessment plays an important role in the democratic process, I also think that, you know, as we think about what's the future of technology assessment, we need to think and find ways to mobilize this very broad access that we have to really be able to capture people's perception and opinions about technology, and also have technology assessment units playing a role in these bigger democratic processes that are enabled by technology as we now see it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Francesco, for remembering us that there is a national, of course, and a local dimension of TA, but we shouldn't forget the transnational dimension. If we do that, then things get too weak. And thank you for remembering that there are ways we can work together so that we can enrich each other's life. Michel Antoine has already been on the floor, and there he told us about a case of technology assessment. I think what you will do now is make us remember some part of the history and then maybe say a little about what we can use that for in the future. That's my feeling. Floor is yours, Michel.
Yes, so first of all, I would like to take you back to the years 82, 83. At that time, we had no personal computer, we had no internet, but at the same time, we had a strong need for technology assessment and parliamentary technology assessment in our country, as it can be the case today for a few of you that wonder whether to create a parliamentary technology assessment structure. Why did we create a technology assessment structure within Parliament in France at that time? Well, it had been a long process that had started, in fact, with the economic crisis of 73-74, you know, the rise of oil prices and the difficulties of economic growth that was stopping. And there was really a big debate in society about what to do. And it was not so easy to invent a new model of development at that period. Of course, the first ideas of creating a structure of technology assessment within Parliament came from the opposition parties that wanted to have a better control of the government. And there were many draft law proposals to create such a body within Parliament in order to better control the government. And after, of course, at first the government opposed this idea. But after a few years, in 81, there was a big change because the Socialist Party came to power. And those that had been the advocates of technology assessment as they were in the opposition were now in power. And they thought it would be a good idea to augment to increase the power of control of Parliament. Because think of what the Parliament is doing. Of course, it has a legislative task, but it has also a tremendous task of control of government. And this was supported by, at that time, by all political parties. And there was a model, the model of the United States, the model of the Office of Technology Assessment. But of course, as it was the United States, it was huge. Many, many persons working, and we didn't have the means of the United States. As today, you may ask yourself, well, oh, France, it's too big. We don't have these means. It's exactly the same situation, if you think. So we decided to do what we could do within our own system, within our own traditions. What were our traditions? Well, first of all, in our parliament, we have a habit of having parliamentarians that take reports, that are nominated rapporteurs, and that write reports. 30 pages, 50 pages, 100 pages, 200 pages. It depends on the time they have. And it depends also on the type of help they can receive from parliamentary civil servants. And I'm one of them. So it was our tradition. Maybe it's not the case in your country. Maybe there are other solutions. Maybe you can use postdoc students having a fellowship. I don't know. But this was our tradition. Of course, The question is, why did Parliament need to have its own structure? We had consultants, we had lobbies, we had governmental agencies, we had the Academy of Science, we had all these big scientific institutions like the National Center for Scientific Research, CNRS, and there was expertise everywhere. But the question is, when there are so many experts, what experts do you listen to? And what do you make with all these reports that you receive on your table? And Parliament felt that it had to have its own expertise within its own body to be able to have to make its own opinion. At least to have people that would read the reports coming from outside. You know, one more report that will be dropped in a basket. And as it was a tradition in France to organize these hearings, so OPEXT was created with this tradition of organizing hearings and of making reports, and of course reports were made by parliamentarians assisted by staff. The question of the independence of expertise of Parliament was absolutely crucial. And the question of the role of parliamentarians was also absolutely crucial. Why did we want so much to be independent? Because at that time there was a tremendous political problem. We had a state within the state. Électricité de France, EDF, the French electrical company, was so powerful that it dictated its wishes to many ministers. Not all of them, but it was too powerful. And Electricité de France had to be controlled from outside and from outside the government. So, in fact, we had this power play. And from the very beginning, it appeared that it was absolutely necessary within Parliament to have a structure that would control nuclear energy. And over three decades, OPEXT has become the structure that controls the government structure, or the independent structure that controls nuclear energy. So two steps. Then, why did it work, and why do we need this parliamentary technology assessment structure today in France? It worked because, from the very beginning, there was a strong wish to have a bipartisan approach and to have a stability in the way we worked on these problems. It was eased because, from the very beginning, it was decided to work on issues where decisions had not been taken. It's always easier to work on issues that will require decisions for the next 5 years or 10 years or 15 years than for issues that require decisions for tomorrow. It's almost impossible because, of course, government has taken decisions, and as parliamentarians of a majority have to support government, it's very difficult to criticize. So it's much easier to be efficient and innovative when decisions have not been taken yet. Then it appears very clearly that we really need a forum to gather all actors interested by a difficult question. I'm talking about nanotechnologies, I'm talking about nuclear energy, I'm talking about genetically modified organism, I'm talking about shale gas, I'm talking about medically assisted procreation, I'm talking about bioethics, all these subjects that are highly controversial in our society, where there is a fight between parties, between religious groups, between ONGs, NGOs, and we need a place to organize a civilized debate on controversial issues. In our system, it's Parliament. In our system, it's OPEXT. In your system, it can be different. But you know, just think of that. It adds something more. It's added political value. The main question is, how do you make parliamentarians and civil society understand what scientists write? I don't know how it is the case in your country, but in my country, we do not understand the speech of scientists. Of course, if you are trained, and I'm one of those that are trained, we can always translate what scientists have written into normal terms. And I say, I'm a cultural mediator, I'm a cultural interpreter, and I explain to politicians what scientists have written. But very few scientists know how to do that. Some might, but in France it's difficult to find. Our question today is really to reconcile public policies and values. Values, it's a word that has been used many times today. We, of course, we have to think of ethics. Of course, we have to think of best practices. Of course, we have to think of difficult policy choices. It is not evident to know whether it's good or bad to promote research on genetically modified organisms or on shale gas. There are many answers. There are two ways. Either you forbid with exceptions, or you authorize, but you take precautions. The attitude of OPEX is much more to authorize, but to take precautions. It's not always what is decided by government that tends at the moment to say, no, we forbid, but with exceptions. So we have ongoing debates with government about it. I'll finish by saying that there is really a need to reconcile short-term and long-term policies. And there's where technology assessment is very important and is a very, very interesting tool. Of course, Parliament is the place, it's one of the places, but it's a very important place where policies for the long term are defined. And as I told you, it's easier to think in the long term. There is a problem of agenda. How much time do you have to work on a report? You never know what you cannot judge of the quality of any document if you don't know in which conditions it has been written and how long, how much time people that had to write it had in front of them. In OPEX, we made this decision very, very early that we would take 1 year to work on a subject. That's why now I can stop in 1 second.
Thank you, Michel. Thank you. I don't know if you remember yesterday, I told you that the PACITA project will end in March 2015. We will end in February with a big conference where, please remember, that that it will be there. It will be an important event, and I also think an important event for the discussions, continuation of the discussions we have now. The floor will be yours in a second. I have a little revenge to make, because you were so slow of getting down from lunch that I will take 10 minutes more of your time. It's not that sad, because anyway, the bus will leave at 4. So you will have 20 minutes to get from this room to the bus, which, when I think of how much time it took you to come from the lunch to here, then I think that's a little narrow, but maybe we can get you down to the bus. We have 20 minutes now, and I think I will remember you about some of the points that Ulla made about the discussions that were MPs to MPs. About what was needed. You said that there would need to be a regular exchange, a regular direct exchange between MPs, and you criticized PACITA for not being enough effectful on that. That's heard. Then you said there needed to be a platform. I think PACITA has been that platform for 3 years, it will be for 1 year more, and I think that has been extremely important. I think many people around the room will nod to that. PACITA has been very important for the development of TA in Europe. But then we have to discuss what will happen after PACITA. What will bring it on? What will make it continue and expand further? You said that there was a need for a handbook on institutionalization of TA. One thing I can say is that PACITA definitely made that. Really, yes. And you said that as well. I mean, now we have a really good insight into how technology assessment institutes have been made, which kind of how their positions in their societies, and also we have a lot of insight into which kind of discussions are being made in countries who are considering to make parliamentary TA. Then you said something about finances, and you said something about the European Commission engagement. And that's where I opened up the floor for you, because what is it we should do in the future to make TA still kicking and alive and still expanding, and I think also covering the whole of Europe? I think that is a very important discussion, and we had 20 minutes for it, and Edgar already has his hand up. Edgar is the leader of the of the Lithuanian Economic Forum, and this one works, Edgar. No, you take this one.
Okay, I want to add to the discussion based on what Francisco said, and probably I will address my question to Ulla. In Lithuania, when we had discussion about the TA establishment, we made the same conclusion as in Portugal, that we are a small country and we need to look what other countries are doing. And especially even about Germany, it was said that, look, Germany in Europe is one of the biggest investors to high technology, so probably we need to be concerned about the ethical side of technologies, and we just need to have the capacity to learn from them and to copy them. So what I want to stress that in all those countries, old PTA countries, what we actually now are doing, we are looking at the examples which in other countries are made already. And if, for example, Germany has its own opinion, if Netherlands has their opinion, and if it's proved by participatory methods in Denmark, so probably it's a good way to start debates in Lithuania about those things without further investments into TA things. So that means that as a small country we can do the TA with less resources. So the question to Ulla probably will be how you look at the cross-border TA issues and how you see if such countries as Germany can take leadership in that.
So it's basically about how can we make synergy so that we use each other's knowledge, the knowledge we make in each other's projects, and give it to each other so that it will be cheaper for small countries to make TA, basically. Is that a good idea? It was directed towards you, Ulla, so maybe you can comment on that.
I think it's a good idea. We discussed it with our rapporteurs for TAB, for our TA unit. And more and more we try to publish our reports in English. It's not usual because it's expensive to make the translation, but we decide from time to time when we think a topic is very interesting all over Europe and perhaps global. And the unit or the platform I have in my mind, or we have in our mind, which might be the end of the process of PACITA 2 and 3. That could provide a library, something like a library, where everybody who wants to get information from independent scientists can look, can have a look, and can use it as an open source for their own information. That may be one use of a platform beside the directly networking, of course. And I think PACITA could be a well opportunity and could be the unit to collect all such good ideas and then have a look and get an idea how it can be organized. And I want to say, enclose the members of parliament if you plan the next steps.
Thank you, Ulla. I just want to say one thing, which about this idea of the library in a way, is that one part of PACITA has been, and Mikael Nendwich has been leading that, is to make a technology assessment portal, which basically is a very strong instrument if we use it right in the future. So it can pick up all different kinds of knowledge from our websites, from our publication, and make it available to everybody. So we have started that, and definitely there needs to be a Pasita 2 and 3 to make it really strong. René?
I have a suggestion. Member states have required the Commission, back in 2001, I think already, to do something which member states never do at home, namely to do an extensive impact assessment of every major legislative proposal. Now, the Commission has been doing this for quite a while, and I haven't noted much interest. I mean, ideally, the European Parliament would also review these impact assessments, before adopting their view on their legislation. Now, when you know that the legislative process takes 18 months ideally 18 months to adopt the legislation at the European level, then you have still another 18 months to implement it back home. But practically, it's a 4 years time lag. Now, I think it would be a good idea if TA offices in member states already early engage on with these impact assessments, which in my view go virtually unnoticed, although they are public, and the quality is not sometimes not so good. So that's an opportunity to catch up with 3 or 4 years, and in the meantime, collectivizing your TA experience at the European level. Just to give one example of such an, even the framework program of Horizon 2020 has been subject of such an assessment called an ex-ante impact assessment. It's published as a book called The Grand Challenge. But there are very weird things in there. Just one example, and this lines up with my talk of this morning. You don't see any relation to what we want to get out of research and innovation. It's primarily a macroeconomic assessment, which says by 2020, we will have 3.7 million jobs more and so many billion euro more GDP. Now, you know all how uncertain and unpredictable technological advance is, and how even more uncertain their social economic consequences are. Now, these economists, they can exactly tell you it's 3.6 million euros, so you believe that.
So, a role about impact assessments for TA, and that is really something going on in the EU now. Yes, I saw a hand here.
Yeah, present yourself. Tiago Santos Pereira from the University of Coimbra here in Portugal. I just wanted to come back to the point about the international and European network, which I think it's something that should be explored and developed. But nevertheless, I would like to make, I think, two things that I also take from the discussions here today, and that I think it's important not to underestimate when thinking about what kind of levels. We've had the experience of the Danish case, where the Danish Board of Technology is locally implemented, is successful, is active. And still we hear MPs saying, well, they were too far, and they didn't reach far enough. They didn't reach close enough to us. And we also have seen how the technology assessment, it's not just about the technologies themselves, but it's about how they relate to the local context, and in particular to citizens. And for example, thinking on the Portuguese case, we've heard about local MPs talking about the need for more appropriate information, but we also have the experience of a disconnect with society and this discussion. So I think we should be wary of thinking in terms, of course, I think a kind of a platform is important, but also not to underestimate the local interactions that technology assessment, first of all, provides as a process. And I think that kind of local, contribution is strongly embedded in the local practices, in the local development of technology assessment. Of course, it can be synergies and complemented with international level, but I think that the local levels should not be underestimated.
I can only say, personally, I totally agree. I mean, that we begin to work together on the European level and continue that and strengthen that should not be in opposition to local engagement.
I have a simple question. What should happen after Pasita 1? I'd say Pasita 2.
or something like that? I mean, are the efforts going to simply be shut off? That's it? There's a portal, a dead body in the internet? No, you built throughout the years a network of experts, of parliamentarians. So in the modern times, we shouldn't do what I used to do in the 80s. In the 80s, I'd talk to the librarian here, not very far away from this room, and I'd say, oh, well, call your colleague in Westminster and try to know what they have there, and send me that by Monday. Should do that. And by using that simple method, for instance, during the 80s, I repeat, I wanted to get the largest agreement, meaning the agreement between the United States government and the Portuguese government, which was kept secret. I got it through the Congressional Research Service, because it was open in the United States. So by doing this, we can get superb information. And nowadays, anyone can get that. Meaning we have Facebook with voice calls since last Wednesday, so money is not relevant. We are not discussing secrets. We don't fear we are being tapped like Frau Merkel. So it's very easy. It's commonplace. It's commonplace information. It's basic information. So there's no reason not to have an informal network, a more formal network. Budget is not dramatically difficult. You have all the tools of Web 2.0, 3.0, etc. Just use them.
Yes. Yes, we have. But on the other hand, we've in Pasita, we did a lot of important things, but it also took some resources to do it. It took resources to have new countries involved. It took resources to be able to make the research and to train people, have summer schools, practitioners training. Yes, exactly. I think what will happen now is that Pasita will close in March 2015. Maybe if we talk a little with the Commission, maybe we could convince the Commission that this was so good that a Pasita 2 would not be bad. If that could happen, then it would start probably in the end of 2016. There is something that was mentioned. You mentioned it, the TA Association. That is something that has been discussed a lot in Pasita, and there are considerations if we should use the conference in March to see if we can launch a TA, a European-wide and maybe an even broader TA association. And we will definitely think more about that. Rini, you marked, did you?
Actually, my question, I think, would be to René Schoenberg. It's about the relationship between technology assessment or parliamentary technology assessment and this whole notion of responsible research and innovation. I mean, if there's a big democratic challenge and we accept that, I mean, why is indeed this budget such a big problem? Because, I mean, what we're talking about here is, well, making technology assessment, parliamentary technology assessment, a European broad experience. I think that's a very important thing if you think about capacity building. So why is it so hard to link this idea, which seems to be very evident to me, to this broad notion of responsible research and innovation?
I think we have to acknowledge that René is not here as a former representative of the Commission. So René, do you want to answer this, or is it? I mean, one of the things we know is that the reason that there is no Pasita 2 in the first call for Horizon 2020 is actually in fact that Pasita 1 was not finished when they made the call. They wanted to see first what Pasita 1 could achieve before they made a new call. And I think I think I will answer instead of René, because I don't think we should put René in that position that he's, I mean, officially not here for. So, but I think it is important for us to express to the Commission if there is a need for Pasita 2. And then it is very important for us to keep the kettle warm until sometime in 2016 when it then can become real. But I mean, it was shown before that parliamentarians can push the Commission to do something here. And hopefully that could be shown again. Was those the final? No, there is. Was there a hand down here? Michel.
Yes, from an outsider point of view, we are not member of PACITA. I will say one of the great achievements that you made in PACITA 1 is the number of parliamentarians that are here today, and in the involvement of parliamentarians from many different countries in that process of defining what PTA could be at the European level. And it is really to be saluted.
Thank you. I think those are nearly the last words, because the first speech that was made in this in today was made by a Portuguese member of parliament, and there were two countries very, very deeply involved in making this session inside the PACITA, and that was of course Portugal, but it was also Switzerland. So the final words will be made by the director of TA Swiss, Sergio Bellucci. He will send you home with some words. Not yet. And also, Sergio, I have to say 10 words after you.
So what?
10 words after you.
Okay. Good. Thank you very much for these last minutes. It's working. Okay. I'll try to collect some impression of this interesting day. First of all, I would like to come back very briefly on the objective of this PACITA project. First of all, look at the already TA countries. What can we do better in the next year? We heard a lot yesterday and today. And the second, the not yet TA countries, how can we help to establish new TA organization in these countries? And I think we heard about some results. Wallonia is going forward, Austria, Portugal. So I think we are on the good track, and this is very nice to hear. The second point, objective of this meeting, was the dialogue with the Member of Parliament, who is the focus of this meeting. And I think we had, with the big number of Member of Parliament that are here, we have a very good results, and thank you very much for coming here to this nice Mediterranean city. Of course, made that maybe a little easier to come to Lisboa, as maybe another cold city, I don't know where, in Switzerland or whatever. Now, if I come back to the point that Ulla said, the basic needs of the Member of Parliament, I think this is really the point. And I was asking myself, also in the discussion we had, do we know the needs of the Member of Parliament, first of all? And second, do we fulfill them? And this, we still have a lot to work on that, but of course we are on the good track, we're doing that. For example, in our discussion with Mr. Felix Müri, member of the Swiss Parliament, said, oh yes, I heard of TA Swiss, but it's not yet in my head. And I hope that now TA Swiss and TA is in your head and can we'll build up on that. I think this is a very important thing, also an objective of TA of PACITA. We have to try to do our best in a better communication, a better visualization of all this concept of TA that we, of course, we think is very good, very important, etc. Then, of course, this process of building up TA is not so easy. It takes a long time. As René Lange said yesterday in Switzerland, as he first started in 1982 with this motion to build up a TA, it took 10 years. So don't be frustrated. Maybe it also takes some more years to build up. But we have to believe in that. And René Lange and we believed in that. And today we have a nice organization of TA in Switzerland, many other countries in Europe. Now, the second point I would like to mention, discuss with you about this PACITA workshop, was what yesterday Lars said in this slide, What about Pachita 2? And we discuss also a lot today about this Pachita 2. And I think, of course, we would like to have a new Pachita, but before we do that, we have to make some reflections. What is the lesson we learned? For example, Leon mentioned these 7 countries with this experience, what they need, a practical, concrete project, how to build the project. These things is very important. They have to build up more on this lesson we learned in this Pachita project, and maybe we need a second Paris meeting, as was mentioned also sometime today, on this reflection before we start with Pachita 2. What was the most important? Where we have to build up mainly on this main target, they are the politicians and of course the society after that. This would be a good thing to do. And there is not only one good TA concept. Of course, there are different models depending on their needs. It was also said because of their culture, political situations, etc. I think this is also important thing. And the last point that I would like to share with you are, of course, the good impression that I had during these days here with you, as it was a very engaged, warm, motivated discussion. I had that feeling on all the table with all the person, and this is also a very good sign for all the good inputs you brought during these 3 days, of course, also, as I said, in this nice city, Lisboa, that we always would like, I think, to come back. And the last thing I would like to say, of course, to make concrete thanks to the organizers of this meeting. First of all, the Parliament for welcoming us here in this nice building and make this meeting possible. Then the second, the Committee of Education, Science and Education for supporting this meeting. And the people, the very nice people all around the time, all around of us, of the Parliament Office of Protocol, they make this nice meeting so warm and perfect organized. And of course, the last most... Yes, thank you. And the last point, as Lars mentioned, was mainly Portugal and Switzerland engaged for the organization of this meeting. TA Swiss and mainly Mara. Thank you very much, Mara, for this organization. And of course, also Daniel Bucci was also a very big support. And as always, he organized this perfectly. Thank you to all of you. And I hope you will have a nice evening tonight in the city of Lisboa. And I give you now the last word to Lars.
Yes, I will just tell you about first of all, 4 o'clock is a very important thing you have to remember. 4 o'clock, that is when the bus will leave. That is in a quarter of an hour. So as I already said, you cannot be as slow as you were after lunch. And so 4 o'clock, the bus will leave. So we have to hurry. But then there's another thing you have to remember. That's 10 minutes to 8. 10 minutes to 8. Because all of those who stay here, there is reserved a room at a restaurant. And we will meet in the hotel lobby 10 minutes to 8. We will walk to the restaurant. And Mara has reserved enough chairs there. Hopefully. She said there is 41 to 42 that will go there, and then she looked a little nervous. But anyway, we will meet in the lobby, and I'm sure that if we should reach 43 or 44, the waiters will solve the issue. I'm quite sure. So now it's 4 o'clock, the bus down there, and then it's 10 minutes to 8. And for those who do not take part of that, get safe home. It was very, very nice to be together with you here. I think we accomplished a lot. Thank you.